Hello, 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 everyone. Go. All right. Greetings, greetings, everyone. I am Nika Sherrell, and this is the ItCast Real Talk on Sex. I want to thank you for joining us this week. This episode is brought to you by the Nikita Sex Toy, the first sex toy designed for adventure, play, and social change in mind. You can learn more about the Nikita Sex Toy at triggerhappytoy.com. So we have been talking this month about privilege, and we are going to continue that theme. But a few of our listeners shared that our conversation last week was not quite sexy enough for you. So taking in all that information, we have decided this week to do the ItCast Real Talk on the Privilege of Dating. This week, our guest has decided to remain anonymous, and we are committed at the ItCast in creating safe space on the airwaves. So due to the sensitive nature of our conversations and our topics, we're going to refer to him as John throughout this conversation. And John, I want to welcome you into the ItCast booth. Please take a minute to tell us a bit about yourself and who you are.
What's up, everyone? Hey, thank you so much, Nika, for having me. I'm super pumped. Not that I don't want to be anonymous because I'm not proud of who I am or I'm not living authentically in my real self, but I think, you know, I want the story to be about the experience that a lot of people have in the South Asian community. And so it's not about who I am or my name or, you know, my specific experience, although I think sharing experiences is incredibly uplifting for everyone in the community. But I figured I don't want attention on that. I want attention on, you know, what we can do moving forward. And yeah, I mean, I've definitely had a lot of pain and struggle and trauma in my life, and I'm happy to talk about it. But, you know, I want the world to know that, you know, we all go through that, and, you know, we can learn from each other. And it just doesn't really matter who that person is. It's, you know, they're a human just like the rest of us. And so, but I'm excited. Yeah. So I guess just about me, I mean, I am part of the South Asian LGBT community. You know, I always joke that, you know, it's funny because I think there's a lot of challenges in being gay and from the South Asian community. But if you think about it, it's a numbers thing, right? Like homosexuality does not over-index in any race, any country. So it's pretty much just a straight up, I've heard like 10% of the population is gay. You know, so if you think about the countries that are most populated, right, there's China and there's India. So there's a lot of gay guys in India. You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm in very, very good company. Whether the country wants to admit it or not, there's a lot of gay guys in your country. So I think it's important to realize that and just not think that any one particular country or people or religion has any less or more. It's just being gay is a human experience. And it's just a certain percentage of the population. And so where there's a lot of humans, there's gonna be a lot of gay humans. And that's just really important to kind of just get, you know, take that in. That's very objective. So, but I was born here in the US. I do thank my lucky stars that, you know, I did have the chance to grow up in a country that's, you know, a little bit more, you know, is more accepting. I think it would, you know, who knows what my life would have been like if I was in the, you know, grew up in India. And I feel for the people that are still stuck in some of those kind of like really traditional communities and villages where they don't have that support. But I was born and raised in Chicago and, you know, was from a family that was very kind of typical immigrant, you know, the kind of East meets West. I mean, my parents were super strict and, you know, really wanted the best for me and my sibling. And just we worked hard, we studied hard, we you know, achieved, and it's been a good life. But, you know, obviously things started coming up when I realized that I wasn't quote unquote normal. So you know, that's really where the story begins, I think, for us. So I'll pause there. Is that a good intro, or you want me to go into? Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you. You know, you really did bring some really great conversation to the surface, just looking at what is it that we consider to be normal, and the idea that normalizing, like, that's where we find a lot of our shame. The other thing that I loved in what you shared is that it's a numbers game. Like anyone out there who thinks they don't know someone who's a part of this community, or anyone out there who thinks that they're completely alone, like it's a numbers game. And there are so many people out there who identify as queer, LGBTQ, all across the world. So just really getting that, like, we exist, and in some places we still have to hide who we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and it's, and no amount of money, no amount of, you know, there's nothing saves anyone from having struggles. You know, it doesn't matter how much, you know, what silver spoon you're born with or not. You know, when you have to start to reconcile with who you are as a person and what you really want in life and how that might be at odds with what your parents have told you or community, or just even what you think is right. No amount of money, no amount of success, no amount of resources will necessarily, you know, save you from that. And I think that's actually interesting, because even with the resources, I had resources at my disposal. I just didn't think to take them because I didn't know how to access them, right? So that's even the cruelty as well. I had resources in the form of therapy I could go to, or mental health professionals. But again, there was a block because in our community, we really looked down on that. You know, we can talk about that in a bit more detail because that's kind of an important part of my story. But, you know, the community of Indian people doesn't necessarily believe that Indian therapy is something that we need to do. Like, you know, we're too smart, we're too educated, we're too developed as people to admit that we have, you know, we have weaknesses, or, you know, we have issues or demons. And so, yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where you're born. We all have, you know, stuff to move through.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's huge, you know, and it's similar in the Black community, not buying into therapy or mental health. You know, it's something that I can see us shifting quite a bit, but it's still one of those very taboo conversations. Like for us, it's like, don't admit that something is wrong with you, because it's already hard enough to be Black in America. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I can definitely relate to that, like not getting the resources, tapping into the things that we need. And that's huge. That's a huge element of the conversation. I definitely believe in mental health and all of the therapies. Please get them, people. you know, I even heard there's a lot of suicides happening lately in the United States from people who don't get that it's like their family, like, knew that they were dealing with, you know, being a part of the LGBT community and not fitting in. And they actually just decided to commit suicide because they didn't think anybody got them. So I have to say that being born in the United States, I take dating for granted. I take it for granted. Like, it's such a privilege to be able to go out and date who I want, see who I want, not, you know, worry about what other people are thinking, knowing that who knows if they're thinking something or not, it's not relevant. But hearing your story and all the things that you've gone through, you know, dealing with your family and growing up, how much I've taken for granted the fact that my family's been very accepting. And like, And as much as I thought, oh, they're not going to be okay with this, or it's not going to be cool, it's a part of the American culture at this point that, like, they didn't give me as much Black as I thought, even though I grew up, you know, mostly pretty religiously in the Midwest, in places where, like, this is still not okay on the surface. It's becoming more okay underneath. So share a bit about, like, you know, you're come from.
Yeah. No, I mean, so I think, you know, for me, it's kind of like you start to think about what you find attractive, and you start to think about, you know, what visuals you like to look at. I mean, I remember the first, you know, incident where I was like, okay, well, definitely something's different is I was shopping with my mom, you know, at Target or something, or Walmart. And we were shopping for my dad too. And, you know, cause just like you're buying all the household stuff, and she had to buy some underwear for my dad. And I was sitting in the cart, and she gave me the underwear packet, you know, the Fruit of the Loom underwear brand. They used to have like this nice torso on the label, just kind of like a nice model torso that would show off the underwear. And I just kind of looked at it and was like, it felt comfortable. It felt like home, you know? And when I was six, I mean, what do I know? I just kind of like remember that. And it's just, I remember that, you know, very vividly. And then I remember having a lot of dreams about, you know, men, just a lot of, you know, I'd be, you know, at the pool, and I just would constantly be, you know, trying to get closer to men and sleep on them and lean, not even sexual stuff. Cause I mean, I was still growing up. I was a teenager, but like, I felt very comfortable laying on a guy's chest, or I just had, yeah, I was just, and I'd wake up and be like, wow, like I always just kind of keep going to that, you know, that space. So your body starts to, you know, kind of give you clues and tell you what you're interested in, you know, and what you're developing as the hormones and as the systems start to fire up. It's like you start to kind of, you know, begin to develop those feelings. So, you know, that was kind of the first inklings, but, you know, I didn't really associate that with being gay. I just assumed that was a phase, or I just assumed that was, you know, something that a lot of people just, you know, it was like, you know, people like appreciate, you know, the male form, and it's beautiful and it's muscular and whatever. And, you know, it still means I could, you know, get married to a girl. And it was something I thought was good. Or maybe I was aspiring to like look like them, you know, and, you know, be fit and be athletic. But yeah, so I basically, you know, kind of had those moments, and, you know, I basically went through college and was kind of really focused on parties and socializing and drinking. I didn't do any of that, you know, in high school, because again, my parents ran a tight ship, and it was all about, you know, education and studies and A+ and being valedictorian and all that stuff. I was off by about three people. I was like number four out of a class of 700. So I'm pretty proud of that, but you know, I cranked it out, you know. And then I came to college and discovered alcohol and discovered friends and discovered parties. And I think that was enough of a novelty or enough of a new unique experience that I didn't really worry about, you know. All my friends were hooking up obviously around me, because it's what you do in college, and a lot of people kind of have their sexual awakening then and discover, and obviously the opportunity is very much there. You have access to a lot of kids that are all living together in the dorms. And you know, of course I noticed that, and a lot of people asked me like why I wouldn't engage with the females. And I had a lot of female friends, because you know, gay guys typically have kind of a whole, you know, entourage of women that they hang out with, because I think women generally are very comfortable around gay men, and we obviously all have a lot in common in that we all love dick. So, you know, it's obviously not surprising that we're all friends. But yeah, basically, you know, college kind of went, you know, came and went. And then it was really after I started, you know, I graduated and I was building my life like any, you know, 24, 25 year old trying to figure out what was next and what's my life going to look like. And that's where like the difficulty started coming, right? And the pain and the recognizing that I'm different and craving the companionship of a male, which I thought initially was just kind of like a more like a physical thing. And now I realized like, yeah, I'm gay, you know? And that's where all the conflict started coming, because I thought about the messaging, not just like of, you know, the Indian community, but even the community at large. And, you know, we've made huge strides as a country. I mean, we're so accepting, and to see like same-sex marriages get approved and, you know, all these role models that are gay and open in the celebrity world and other professions. And, you know, but it was tough. There was a lot of things even that my parents might have said, and I don't blame them, because, you know, everyone comes from somewhere, and no one's perfect, and no one, you know, no one knows how to raise a person, right? I mean, you there's no dress rehearsal. You do it as you're faking it as you're doing it. Like, I mean, like, or you're learning as you do. There's legit, like, not, I mean, there are obviously millions of books, and you know, you can theorize about it, but until the baby's in your hand, and then you're just kind of going it. Like, I mean, we're all living life with no specific, you know, rule book or guide, you know? And so anyways, I don't blame them, but you know, obviously what happens happens, and, you know, and the important thing is just to start to, you know, to deal with it and acknowledge it. So, you know, it was a really dark time. It was definitely the dark ages for me. And you know, I built this mental disorder. It's called body dysmorphic disorder. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I developed that because I started really getting obsessed with my skin and thinking that my skin was all messed up. And this is the same disorder family that, you know, anorexia and bulimia belong to. So it's this idea
that you have created or manifested a physiological issue, whether it be like you think you're too fat or, you know, you, for me, it was the skin. I thought my skin, my facial hair was all messed up. And I could not let go of that. You know, I just manifested this issue in my head and saw like so many dermatologists because I was just convinced that it was external. It was my skin. I never in my head made the connection that really this was not real. And it was just the fact that I hadn't accepted who I was. I didn't love myself. I had that internalized homophobia. And so I had to find something to point that towards. I had to find an external, you know, issue because there was nothing, but in my head there was. So, you know, and it took seeing a doctor. So he was a therapist, you know, after seeing a bunch of dermatologists. I think the last one was like, you know, you've got a mental issue. This is not a skin thing because I'm a good dermatologist. I know what I'm doing. I don't see anything, you know, and you can say it's an issue, but I can't diagnose something if I don't see it. So I said, well, what the hell, you know, I, at this point, tried to kill myself a few times because just, you know, when you're in that depression, when you're in that darkness, you just, at this point, I was just so convinced that my skin was messed up and nothing would work. I mean, I tried every lotion and pill and medication and treatment. And of course, nothing was going to happen because it was all internal. So you just kind of give up, you know, and you're just like, I don't see a way out. But luckily I saw a therapist and he, I think, had diagnosed me right away. He kind of knew in his head, probably, okay, this guy's obviously got some issues internally because he's talking about his skin and there's nothing there. But he obviously knows that I can't, you know, he can't just tell me that because I have to discover it myself. I have to realize it myself. That's the thing is once you see an issue with someone, like you can't tell them because it only works if they discover it for themselves. That's how you actually, you know, help someone is just kind of walk them through their own path. So he basically kind of got me to talk about myself. And he was like, do you have a girlfriend? I said, no. He's like, do you have a boyfriend? And that was the first time actually anyone in my life, you know, had brought that up because he probably knew he was kind of treading the waters. He knew exactly where he had to get me so that, you know, but he knew what he was up against because he knew that I had this kind of hatred. So he knew that I was going to be defensive and resist because he knew where my acceptance was at that point. Right. He knew that there was this wall. And so he asked me very gingerly, like, well, do you have a boyfriend? And I kind of was like, no, like, what are you talking about? Cause you know, obviously I didn't want anyone to know what was happening and the secrets and the fact that I was watching, you know, gay porn and what have you. And so he was just like, well, you know, that's cool. Don't worry. Like, I got it. That's good to know. But he was like, I recommend you just go talk to someone, find someone in your life that doesn't know anyone in your family, can't tie you back to your friends. I mean, just someone who's kind of on the periphery and can just listen to whatever you're dealing with, whatever you're doing, whatever, just share. And so I was like, well, sure. I mean, I had no idea what he was talking about, but I figured, okay, well, maybe I just got to talk about, you know, my skin issue and maybe other things will come up and we'll be good to go. So anyways, I asked my colleague at work, who was a dear friend of mine, very dear friend. And we go to dinner and, you know, I'm about to tell her, okay, well, she should know that I do watch gay porn and I think dudes are hot. And obviously that was stuff I clearly wanted to tell people. And I was itching just to be myself and be authentic, but had all these blocks and barriers. So, you know, we both got really drunk and finally I just had the nerve to be, I just got the courage or the nerve to be like, hey, you know, I think dudes are hot. And I think that's what I said. And she was just like, okay. Like it was the most like blasé, you know, okay, who cares? Like the most non-news that she could have heard, because she was like, whatever. And just that acceptance and the reaction she had just completely made me realize that there was nothing wrong. There was nothing wrong. This is just who I am. And, you know, we spent the rest of the night checking out guys and looking at, you know, and I, every few minutes I'd be like, is that okay? And she was like, yeah, I mean, like, whatever, like, this is your life, like, do what you got to do. And I woke up the next morning, and because that was probably the first night where I had literally just shared all the stuff that I think guys are hot and, you know, everything. And that was it. That was all it was. And the next morning I woke up and I ran to the mirror and like, legit, I didn't have any issues with my skin. Like it completely disappeared. I woke up a new person. I mean, and I can't tell you, I mean, if I could bottle up that feeling that morning. I mean, I'll never forget. I mean, I was hungover as anything, because obviously I got drunk, but I woke up that next morning, I went to the mirror, and I saw myself, you know, because for the first time in my life, I had been myself with a friend about a part of my life that I had just never, ever shared with anyone. And she just accepted me 100% and just made it such a non-issue and just was so blasé about it, because it's not an issue. It's just, it's just as significant as the fact that I have black hair. It's just a part of me, but it isn't defining me. And obviously, like, it is a big part of me, and I have to navigate experiences because of it. But again, it's not such a big thing. And so I called the therapist the next morning, and I was crying, because I'm like, there's not enough money in the world I can give you. You saved me. I mean, because I feel great. I don't have any, you know, anything going on. And he was like, I mean, he was just like, well, it's all a day's work. There's really, you know, that's what we do, you know. And he was like, I hate to break this to you. This is like, you're a textbook. This is not very, you're not very special. There's a lot of guys that have the same exact issue. And so,
yeah.
And then that began a journey, you know, of acceptance and joining the community and embracing who I was and going to gay bars and going to gay clubs and, you know, exploring the sexual side of things and just having the ability to, you know, be myself, be 100% authentically, genuinely who I was, who I was meant to be, nothing else. And that's just the best gift. That's the best thing that you could ever do for yourself. And yeah.
I love that. You know, I love the fact that your friend normalized it for you. And that's, you know, that's the space that we need to be in. I'd love to hear you share just a little bit more about like the internalized homophobia, because that's the killer. Like that's the part that actually takes us out of being able to be ourselves, be with the people that we love and care about. And like, that's where the shame comes from. So could you share just a little bit more about like that, what that
is? I mean, it's a lot of things. I mean, it's, you know, and it's all unconscious, right? It's all things that you pick up, and it's even stuff that people don't intend to leave with you. It's amazing how our lives, our minds are like, you have no idea what you're reacting to, what you're registering, what you're taking in. And then even if I don't make a point at the time where I hear it to do anything about it or get defensive. So for example, even like something as simple as, you know, growing, you know, when I was my first time out of college, this guy, because I wasn't totally out, but this guy came to me and he was like, because I think at a certain point people, and I don't, you know, again, we can get into like, you know, and this I think also is some homophobia in the community, is like this idea of like, oh, like you don't seem gay. Like I've heard that phrase, and like what a horrible, horrible phrase, right? It's like, well, what does that even mean? Like what does that mean, you don't seem gay? Like, you know, obviously referencing the fact that, you know, kind of the stereotypical like feminine voice and the kind of like the dainty whatever, and that's just you know, that is just one expression of it, but doesn't mean it's everything. And look, there's some straight guys I've met that they're not necessarily like coming back from, you know, branding cattle. they're not like, you know, they're not, you know, G.I. Joe by any means, and I've seen them wear an apron or two, you know, a time or two. So let's not pretend like, you know, there's just no black or white. There's every shade of gray on every side.
Yeah. And that's so important, you know, to actually get that gender is not the paradigms in which we've created it to be. You know, it's like women aren't supposed to be this way and men aren't supposed to be that way. And our gender has nothing to do with what we like sexually. Like those are two completely different worlds, and we get caught up. I think that's where a lot of gender-based violence comes from, a lot of aggression. You know, like that male aggression where it's like, you have to be such a man. And it's like, well, actually you just have to be yourself.
You have to be yourself, and you have. But yeah. So, I mean, I remember like, you know, again, I don't display the typical characteristics, but what does that even mean? I hate that. But there'd be a couple of times like where people would be like, hey, like, you know, I'm cool with the whole gay thing. Like, it was just this idea of like needing to clarify that like they don't have an issue with it. And like people don't realize like that is so rude and insensitive, because it's you're saying like, well, I'm okay with it. You know, it's just like, I don't have to tell someone like, well, hey, you know, I'm cool with it that you're straight. Like where is the double standard where you have to tell me like, hey, I'm okay. I'm giving you permission to live your life, but I can't give you, I'm not giving you permission to live your life. Like, what does that even mean? I hated that. I remember very vividly a couple of coworkers, like, you know, we'd be working late and they just be like, we'd just be talking and, you know, and look, maybe it was just, they just wanted to know who I was. And they, you know, they probably just wanted me to just share like, you know, what I really was going through, and maybe they just cared about me, you know, and they just wanted to hear whatever I was going, and they just didn't know how to make it a safe space. But it doesn't matter, because if someone's not ready to share that side of them, and, you know, first of all, you should never suspect or guess or whatever, but then to say like, hey, you know, I'm cool with it. Okay, what does that mean? Like, what is there to be cool with? Are you implying that some people aren't? Like that type of, well, you're this and I'm like, you know, it's moving you out. It's putting you outside of society. You know what I mean? Like, it's basically saying like, well, you're living this alternative lifestyle and, you know, you're not with us, but I'm not judging you. No, who's to judge anyone?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that's, and it's almost like those microaggressions, you know, that's the stuff that almost is worse than any kind of full-on bullying or attacks. And I've never been attacked. I've never been bullied. Oh, I've been bullied, you know, growing up, but that's obviously like, you know, that's because I probably had like a mustache, you know, when I was like, you know, 7 years old and, you know, grew my facial hair faster than most people. And they thought it, whatever. I mean, just like, you know, or like I, you know, tucked in my shirt inside my pants, because that's what some Indian kids did. And, you know, my parents didn't know any better. So yeah, I mean, I got bullied, but you know, the gay thing never, I was never, attacked or, you know, but it was those things. It was just the little comments that build up. And again, you just, when you hear it, you know, you don't say anything, or you just kind of, I mean, at that point, I probably just was like, yeah, no, that's cool. I'm not gay. Like, I probably denied it again but then you remember that, you know, and it gets planted somewhere in your subconscious, you know, and then it's always going to come up.
Oh, yes. That's fantastic. I mean, I love that you pointed to the whole microaggressive aspect of it, because I think that culturally we're just getting present as a whole to what microaggressions are, what they look like, and how they exist. And like you said, like, it's the little seeds, like they get in there and then they'll grow and they'll fester. And then later on, it's an opportunity to use it, you know, as a bit of shame, you know, a way to like beat ourselves or not allow ourselves to actually fit into the conversation. I also love what you said, your doctor said about it being like textbook. Like, it just, that is the kind of thing where I wish people got how common this is. So it's not such a shock.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, yeah, these are things that there are people study, because it just happens so much. And, you know, there's this is the same experience that everyone, because we're all products of this, you know, like the same society, the same messaging, the same trauma. I mean, it's, you know, we all get in different flavors. We might, you know, the manifestation is different, but like at the crux, it's still about self-love.
Absolutely.
And that's just, yeah.
You brought up one thing there at the end about like being outside of society. Especially when it comes to like, you know, like, oh, it's cool that you're gay. Like, you know, it's okay that you're that way. I'm not that way, but you can be that way if you want to. Can you talk a bit about like what it's like, you know, witnessing people who like if you just fit into what the normal cookie cutter stereotypes look like, the difference that life can be. So,
yeah. Well, that's what's coming up for me right now, especially. And it's like, you know, the pandemic, and I'm trying to create a life that I love, you know, a life that I'm
I'm proud of, that I'm happy with, that I feel myself, I'm energized, I'm self-expressed, it's authentic. You know, and it's like, because, you know, it's not the typical life. It's just, you have to like work that much harder to figure out like, well, is this what I want? Is this what I think society wants? Like, what do I really want? You know? And so it's right now, like, you know, I'm single and, you know, I think I'm trying to understand how to navigate dating. And, you know, I mean, I think, no one knows how to fall in love. No one knows how to like approach relationships. You just do it. You're, you know, and you meet people and people pass into, come and go into your life. And some of them stay, some of them leave, and some, you know, stay longer. Some leave faster. Like, you know, it's just, I mean, we're all literally just, you know, trying it every day. And, but, you know, but when you have a bunch of people trying to figure it out, if you have a bunch of people that are kind of living, you know, what has been passed down, I mean, if there's a template that they can use, that kind of helps them, you know, understand what they want. And, you know, there's like women that need the children, right? And so that can kind of be like something that helps, you know, drive relationships. Not to say that, you know, that's how you should, you know, enter relationships. I mean, it's not like, you know, procreation is the only reason, but like, I guess my point is just like, I feel like gay men, you know, we don't have a reason to be together. I mean, of course, like everyone wants companionship, but I feel like there's just a little bit more flexibility and freedom. And again, this isn't to say that straight people can't have every iteration of their own experience. I mean, that is another way to assume that, you know, people have to have kids, or it has to be, you know, children. Like, that's kind of the same thing, right? I feel for the women who, you know, who don't want to have kids, you know, or don't want to be mothers, and how they feel like they're outside of society. It's the same thing. I mean, I was talking to one of my friends who said, you know, it's amazing the experience that, like, so they've consciously decided to not have kids. And he says that when he tells his buddies, hey, we've decided not to have kids, they high five him and say, oh man, like, that's awesome. Like, how'd you get out of that one? Like, you're so lucky. Whereas with the woman, when the woman tells her friends, hey, we've decided to not have kids. It's kind of like, oh, well, are you sure? Like, are you okay? Like, you know, have you thought about, like, you know, it's just kind of, again, that stereotype.
Oh, yeah.
So it's the same kind of thing, right? Which is, it must be so painful. But anyways, my point is, so as much as there is no rhyme or, you know, like, there's no rule of how you do it in the straight world, I do think, because marriage and those things are social constructs that have been passed on for so long, and there are some people that want to get married and are striving for that, you know, I just don't know what that, if there's a comparable metric for gay men. I mean, there are gay men who want to get married and have unions and, you know, do have kids, but, like, again, because it's just there's not as much of that, I think, or, you know, maybe they're just harder to find or to kind of replicate or look at a role model of someone who's lived, you know, the life that I want to live. I do feel like a bit of like, I'm kind of, you know, like in the dark, you know, with like no headlight.
Yeah. Oh, I get that. I love that. You know, it does suck to have this like standard, stereotypical, this is the way that life is supposed to be, like nuclear family, you know, husband, wife, 2.5 kids. And being, you know, where we are in life, it's like, what are the templates? What are the healthy templates? You know, what are the ways in which we can actually begin to build and set examples for future generations of people within the community who also need these conversations? So I love that. That's really powerful. All right, we did go just a touch over, but we are about to go ahead and close the show. Is there anything else that you would like to share with our listening audience before we wrap up?
Just, you know, love yourselves. Know you're not alone. Share, be vulnerable. And yeah, know that it's all trial and error. And like, legit, there's not a single person who knows exactly what they're doing. There's not a legit person who knows exactly what they're doing. And to think, just for them to say, you know, is just, you know, foolishness. So that's about it. But this has been great, Nika. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm just gonna put a little tag on that. Share with someone who is no stakes, like not you know, not the family, the close friends, but someone who just, you can get that information out there and eliminate the shame. I think that's fantastic advice. And share with someone this Valentine's Day. Love yourself, because that's how you get to love everyone and really even have the capacity to love anyone. So thank you for joining us all today. Just so you know, next week, I'm going to be speaking on the Kink panel workshop with kink.com. The workshop is called Kink On and Off the Page. You can find information about that on Eventbrite. And also, this episode was brought to you by the Nikita Sex Toy, designed for adventure, play, and social change in mind. You can learn more about that at triggerhappytoy.com. That's triggerhappytoy.com. And you can learn more about the ItCast and our work at nikasherelles.com. That's nikasherelles.com. Thank you so much for joining us on the ItCast Live, and we will see you again next week.